This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. We are a man down, but still feeling strong. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee. Jonathan Hood from ESPN 1000 here today as well. Of course, you can always catch him, ESPN 1000, SiriusXM on Sundays, talking wrestling on Busted Open Radio as well. But we've got a big show today. We had a lengthy conversation with Saraya, which we will react to here in just a little bit as well, with her new book, Hell in Boots, being released earlier this week on Tuesday. But where we start is WWE. For the second consecutive week, we see a promo cut by John Cena overseas. And I believe there's only one more date he's got left, and it's at the O2 in London coming up on Monday in this build for WrestleMania. So the question is simple. This is clearly the main event of WrestleMania 41 in Las Vegas. Are you into the Cena versus Cody build, Jay Hood?
Yes, Gabe Neitzel, I am into the build for Cody and Cena. But what I would say is that after getting off to such a great start with Cena coming out and addressing the audience in Belgium, in week number two, something stalled in the story. We are stuck in neutral with the story. And I understand that you got to stretch this thing out as much as possible until The Rock comes or WrestleMania. But the point is, though, is that I didn't feel that there was an advancement in the story that we saw on Monday. And I think that it will accelerate once we see The Rock. I think that that's the issue. So as much as I thought week one was good, I'm still interested in the story. But I think we're all just waiting to hear what The Rock has to say so we can get a full view of why this match is taking place.
I'm into the Cena part of this build. I don't know if I'm necessarily into the Cody part. Because right now, Cody hasn't... like, it could just be generic WWE champion, right? Like, the promos that Cena is cutting, at least... And I know Cody came out later or whatever, and they had a little bit of a face-to-face. But the fun part to me of Cena so far, it hasn't been promos he's cutting against Cody. Right? Like he needed, and we make fun of this all the time here on GKW, but like the promo specifically when he went after Austin Theory and just eviscerated Theory when he went into that WrestleMania feud, like that was specifically up against Austin Theory. He needed Austin Theory to tell the story they were telling specifically directly across from him. Mm-hmm. Right now, to tell the story that they're telling, it could just be generic WWE babyface. I don't see any sort of like uniqueness to Cody on the other end. I'm hoping maybe we get that in London, but right now the more interesting parts of the two promos that we've seen overseas, one, obviously him explaining himself, explaining why you're not getting new merch, even though there was a new t-shirt that was released on Tuesday. Yes. You're not getting new merch, not getting a new song, all these different things. And then it's basically Cena versus Cena right now. Mm-hmm. It's the new Cena versus the old Cena going up against the crowd. Oh, now it's, I'm going to be the last champion ever. Like, I'm taking that championship home with me. This is what I'm doing. And there's really, like, right now, Cody's there because he's the champ. But I want to see something specific to Cody Rhodes to get me excited for Cena versus Cody. Right now, I'm just excited for Cena.
Yeah.
And the Cody part of it just hasn't quite been folded in to whatever story they want to tell.
So I have an idea to try to help that coming up next Monday. But first, I'll just piggyback on what you're talking about. So John Cena says on Monday that he's going to ruin wrestling.
Yeah.
And if you ask the average WWE fan, you've already done that with the spinner belts and be part of the PG era, that you ruin wrestling being part of the PG era and being the face of it. But I think that he did go a step further to tell you that he's going to do that. He's going to retire with the championship or be the champion and take on all these contenders all the way to the end of the year or whatever he's going to do. But I think that the best thing for WWE now is for them to have Cody come out first. And for Cody to be able to ask the question, you know, I've been out here and I've faced John twice now and I've got no answers. And so Cody should come out with the microphone and say, you know what? I'm asking the same question that you're asking. Why? Why did John have to do that? I know that John doesn't like you, the fans, but why did he do that against me? And so when Cody's out there, now John Cena comes out. Mm-hmm. Instead of John coming out first, Cody asks why. I want an answer. Here comes John sauntering down to the ring. And now you have a little bit of a back and forth. And hopefully The Rock will be there in London as well to be a third party to all of this. But I think Cody should ask the question as the babyface as the face of WWE. I'm asking what you're asking. Why?
Yeah, why John Cena specifically? Yeah, I think that's a great idea because Cena has come out. He's let off both the last couple of Raws where he's been able to dictate whatever he wants to dictate. And again, it appears as if, again, I have no idea if Rock's going to show up in London. We have no idea if Rock, I mean, as far as I know, Rock isn't advertised for anything between now and WrestleMania. And I've hypothesized on this show of, well, is he going to show up for WrestleMania? I have no idea what's going on. That everything seems to be playing close to the chest. And if Rock isn't going to show up, Cody's going to have to do a lot of the heavy lifting in the final couple of weeks leading up to Vegas. But that's, again, that's where, I mean, right now, it doesn't matter that it's Cody Rhodes that's there. Right now, it's all about John Cena. Cody needs to insert himself somehow, some way into more of the conversation because I'm assuming at the end, Cody probably is the one that ultimately beats Cena before Cena, you know, when Cena's threatening to leave and he's taken on all challengers, defends it a couple of times. I'm guessing Cody gets the championship back, assuming he loses it at WrestleMania. But in order for me to care about that, you've got to get me to start investing into Cody Rhodes now. And that's one thing that Triple H, where he's been good at the long-term storytelling, you got to start planting those seeds now of making me care about Cody beating Cena down the line. Because right now, all I care about is Cena winning. And I'm like, I can't wait to see what happens when Cena's the champ. What's he going to do? What's he going to do next? And again, maybe, again, I feel like I've probably been the most negative about Cody on this show than anybody else.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just me not being the biggest Cody Rhodes fan here. And Cena's a great heel right now. He's a great villain. And all great heroes need that great villain. It's why the Cody build to him going over Roman Reigns was so fantastic. Mm-hmm. But now you have to recreate that with a new guy, and they just haven't made me care about the Cody part yet. They've just only made me care about the Cena part.
Because look at the back and forth that they've had. It's been kind of cold, right? Like the first time you see Cody Rhodes and Cody and Cena didn't say anything. And the second time around, you hear what Cena had to say. And Cody, again, he held his own. It wasn't horrible. But I think that, but again,
but there was just no substance to it. Yeah, there's just no substance to their back and forth. And
that's it.
And honestly, like the substantive back and forth part of a lot of John Cena promos over the course of his career that you can think of, like that's kind of been the fun part of when he was a babyface. And you can easily do that now when he's a heel. Again, they're going to have that opportunity and hopefully they knock it out of the park because it might be their last opportunity to really build it and make people buy in and certainly really care.
You know what it is, Gabe, real briefly, is just like, you know, the WWE has a great opportunity here to showcase whatever they want because they're internationally. So no matter what's in the ring, you know, there's going to be sold out and people are going to be at full throat and so excited to see it. Right. Like, would this go over in Charlotte or in Des Moines as they make their road to WrestleMania to Vegas? Yeah, I think people will be into it, but I think there'll be more complaints or some indifference here or there. But internationally, you can see the crowds are all into it, no matter what's going on, even though we just want to have answers. And so hopefully, you know the slow boil from WWE. I'm all for the slow boil. I understand what they're trying to do, the slow burn, but it stopped on Monday, and that's got to get better moving forward.
Well, I'm all for the slow burn. Yeah. I guess I just need to trust the pieces in place.
Yeah.
And if there's nobody, again, I the slow burn worked a lot of times for the Bloodline, even when Roman wasn't there, because you had other pieces of the Bloodline to help continue the story. These are just Cena's kind of a part of whatever faction Rock's putting together, which apparently something with Drew McIntyre also coming soon, according to Drew McIntyre with The Rock. I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
But if there's nobody from the heel side to represent themselves over the final 2-3 weeks of this feud, I don't know how much the slow burn makes sense because it's tough to tell the story just by yourself if you're Cody Rhodes.
Yep.
That's just you're asking a lot of Cody Rhodes to do that, to carry the water and carry it all for everybody, especially when, again, you've only got one last chance, I think, to really heat it up with those two in the same arena coming up on Monday night in London. But we've got some other things we need to dive into here on GKW. As I mentioned earlier this week, we had an opportunity to catch up with one of the newest authors out there, Soraya, as her book Hell in Boots hit stores this past Tuesday. We had a lengthy conversation with Soraya about her book, about her career, and what exactly is coming next for the former AEW and WWE champion. Very excited to talk to our next guest here on GKW as her book, Hell in Boots, comes out on Tuesday. Amazon, wherever you get your books, make sure you pick this one up. You're not going to want to miss it. As we welcome in Soraya, thank you so much for the time.
Hello. How you doing, you guys?
Oh, doing great.
We're great. Thanks for thanks for being on.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, your life, obviously, interesting enough, certainly for a book, but you've already had a movie. Like, usually people write the book and then the movie comes out. You're doing it in the reverse, where the movie came out and now you've got the book. What made you want to sit down and write a book?
Dude, you know what? I do feel very, very grateful that I mean, I shouldn't have had a movie by the time I was 21. That's like such a rare occurrence. So, like, I feel very grateful for that. And that's amazing. But, like, you know, the movie version was a toned down version, you know, like it had to be PG, it had to be family, like friendly, you know? And so now, like, you know, okay, this is where I started. Like, I'll be completely honest, right? When me and WWE parted ways, right, I was so scared about what's happening next, right? So I was just like, and I needed to focus my mind on something. I was just like, what's going to happen? You know, like, this is all I've known for so long. Like, they've kept me so busy and I have to be busy. I hate not being busy, you know? And then my manager was just like, you know, why don't you start writing your book? And I've been wanting to write it for a very long time since the movie came out. And then, you know, and since I've had like a crazy life and everyone has told my story for me apart, you know, and it should have been like, it's just very confusing. A lot of people have told my story throughout the years and I'm a very controversial figure, I know. So every, like, you know, and everyone has like different sides of the story. So I was like, okay, well, this is my chance, because I thought I wasn't ever going to work again until like a month later, I guess. But I was like, this is my chance to start writing it. And so I did. And then I had a ghostwriter that helped me write. And I didn't like it. I didn't think the book was good. What, like, I thought it was good. It wasn't good enough. Like, she made me sound like I was at the cost of Annie a little bit. She was very sweet. She did a great job. But I was like, this isn't right. Like, so the timing were off. Like, the stories were all mixed up. I was like, no, I can't put this out like this. So then I rewrote it for another year with my good friend Taylor. We spent another year rewriting the whole thing. So it took over 2 years to get this book done, but I'm so bloody grateful for it. And it was all because me and WWE parted ways. That was it. I was like, okay, like, let's start this journey, I guess. And it's the craziest, most frustrating journey that I've been on, I think. It's very intense.
Soraya, when it comes to your family, wrestling's in your bloodline. I'm just wondering, if you didn't wrestle, what was going to be your lot in life?
Oh, my gosh. You know, when I was younger, I really wanted to be a vet or a zoologist. You know, every, you know, 10-year-old girl wants to work with animals. But I was so deeply in love with Steve Irwin, and I was absolutely devastated when he passed away. Like, I wanted to be him. Like, that's who I wanted to be. So if I wasn't lucky enough to be born into a wrestling family, like, because that's all we did was we eat, sleep, shit. I don't know if you can cuss on here. Wrestling, yeah. Dude. Like,
go
that's,
for it.
Okay, yeah. Good. So that's all we did. So, like, I was very lucky to be born into it, but I think I would have been working with animals. And I try to fight it while also being in a wrestling family, because I was like, I'm not following the family business. I try to rebel a little bit. And, yeah, wrestling just consumes you. So
speaking of that wrestling life, what is the reaction of friends when they realize what your life is? Because you're not joining the family accounting business. You're the pro wrestling business. What's the reaction of friends when they were learning about you?
Yeah. Apologies, Vance. I have a bird, by the way. So if he screams bloody murder, it's because he wants attention.
Okay.
So no one's getting murdered in my room. But I was like, good, perfect timing from my animals. They know exactly when I'm trying to do stuff. But yeah, so again, my life growing up has all been about wrestling. So everyone kind of knew. No one knew me as anything different. So, like, maybe introducing myself to, like, newer people, they're always, like, a little bit confused. They're just like, you're a wrestler. I expect you to be, like, looking like, you know, John Cena. And I'm like, actually, no. You know, I'm actually one of the bigger ones. A lot of the girls are a lot shorter than me, you know. So it's like, people are always surprised, but my friends are so used to it. I have friends that aren't wrestling fans too, which I love, that I've been best friends with for like 13 years that they never asked me about it. They come to like certain shows and stuff like that, but like when they found out, they were just like, oh, okay, well, we don't care. I was like, good, good, okay, cool.
Well, one of those friends who keeps coming up in the book wrote the foreword to the book, Renee. What has she meant to you? How did she react when you asked her to write the foreword for the book?
You know, me and Renee this past weekend got a tea bag tattooed on us. So we randomly got a spermatozoa tattoo because, she's one of my favorite people in the world, one of my very best friends. She was like, let's do a tea bag because it's like a Commonwealth connection. And I was like, okay. So a drive-by tea bagging, we called it this past weekend. But no, she's been absolutely amazing. And when I asked her to write the foreword, she was just ecstatic about it. And she also did the audio for it too. So in the audio book, she's reading the foreword, which I was so pleased about. And then John Moxley, her hubby, also read the book and left a review too on the book. And it was those two are just the most beautiful people. And I feel so grateful to have them in my life. You know, they're like my family and like, they just, they're so, the way both of them write is so beautiful. I was like, damn, you should have wrote my book. You know, it was just like really, really great. Like, and so she was really grateful for it. She was really pumped. And it made me cry, dude. Like her and Moxley's review both made me cry. They just, I'm like, oh my God, you guys really are my best friends.
Soraya, the same John Moxley that bleeds every Wednesday, that's got a 2x4 with nails in his back.
Yeah. Did you see his back 5 days ago?
That guy. Yeah. Everyone, like, you know, even if they've known him for a very long time, like, they never know if like, he likes them or not because he's quite a quiet guy. He's quiet. And then he gets to the ring and does all these crazy things. But I've known him since day one of coming over to America. And, you know, he's always been, like, pretty quiet. You know, he's in general, even now, like, if I go to the house to watch, like, UFC, like, you know, he's, like, he can get a little bit extra talkative. But, yeah, he's a nice guy. And people, like, are shocked about that. I'm like, he's so sweet. He helped me with my... When I first came to AEW, first of all, he was one of the people that convinced me to come to AEW. But then he was like, after I shit the bed with that first promo, because I was so nervous, I didn't know what I was saying, I didn't know what I was doing within the company. I'm like, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what's going on. Like, I wasn't cleared by that point yet. So I was just like, I didn't know what to say in this promo. So then Moxley helped me with my second one that I had with Britt in the ring. And he, like, emailed it and he was like, he's very old school, but he emailed it to me and it was like, he was like, you need to be talking like this and like, you should be like speaking from the heart. And he helped me so much when I first came in, like he brought my confidence back into the wrestling business because he was so like, even like when me and Britt did like the sit down or sorry, I was sitting down and Britt wasn't there, I think. I don't know. It was some kind of segment and he sat there with Renee, you know, and watched me and directed it and like made sure that it came across really well. Like he just, he's a great guy. Great guy.
How much of that is rust versus, you know, just you said nerves, but what about rust? Because, again, toward the WWE, toward the back end of your time there, we didn't see you. And then you're on AEW's platform. You still had to be able to. How much of that was rust for you?
I think a lot of it was rust, but I also think my nerves was a big catalyst of it, too, because, again, I hadn't been in a ring in front of a camera or anything like that in over 5 years. You know, it was a very long time. I think 5 years or at least 4 years, you know, but it was, I was scared. And then I was in front of a completely new audience. You know, there's like, most of these are like diehard wrestling fans, you know, that would go to AEW. Now it's expanded to like more, you know, across the board, but like, it was terrifying. And I was like, I actually second guessed coming back to wrestling because of it. I was just like, I don't know if I made a mistake here, you know? And so, but luckily again, I had friends like Renee and John that really helped me, you know, get my footing again.
In terms of that return to wrestling, at any point, how much did you have doubt that that day would ever come again after your injury?
Oh, I never thought it would come again. I never, ever thought I'd get back in the ring. Like, they told me. They were just like, I didn't have fluid around my spinal cord, like, in a certain area. I'm like, I get kicked, like, even a little bit, I'll be paralyzed. If I just walk and trip over, I could be paralyzed. It was, like, a terrifying injury to have, you know. And I like to blame it on my healthy lifestyle, you know. Or I'm Wonder Woman. But, no, I like to blame it on that because, you know, it's very open and people know I used to have addiction issues and all that kind of stuff. And once that kind of like, once I fought against that and came out the other side, I was really healthy. Like I went to the gym, I was eating vegan food. Like most of it was just freaking lettuce, you know? And just like, I didn't smoke, I didn't do drugs, I didn't do anything. And I think that really helped me, or I like to believe it helped me. Yeah, I don't know.
So going from, you don't think that moment's ever coming, to lifting the world championship inside of Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
Like how does that journey happen? When do you find out, oh yeah, you, by the way, when this ends, you're going to be lifting this up in your home country. Like what was that emotional roller coaster for you?
Yeah. So we had like obviously four different finishes to the match because we just didn't know who was going to be going over. Right. And I was like, there's no way he's going to put this strap on me. That's too easy. Right. I was thinking that's too easy. Like he's not going to do that. Maybe like, I always second guessed myself a lot in wrestling. Outside of wrestling, I'm pretty confident, but within wrestling, like, you know, I'm pretty hard on myself. And I never thought within a year of me being in the company that I would be getting the championship. There's no way. I thought I'd have to grind even more. And I'm so grateful that I got that opportunity, especially at Wembley, especially with my family in front of my, like my home country. And I never thought that day would come. So when he did tell us, it was like the night before, he had just, cause he owns Fulham Football Club too. So like they were having a footy match and then he flew in really quick, around 10 o'clock at night. And then we were all sitting around the ring, like, what's going on? It's tomorrow. Like, we need to figure this out. And then, he came out and he's like, yeah, you. And I was like, what? I was like, I burst into tears, dude. I was just like, oh my God, I'm just so grateful. I never thought this would ever happen again. I was adamant. I was like convinced this would never happen again. I will never hold another championship in my life. And so the fact that I got that, it was so emotional and I sobbed. They just couldn't believe it. I didn't tell my family either. So then when they came out and then at the very end, they were very shocked. They were like, oh my God, I just wanted to surprise them, you know?
Soraya, I'm hoping that in the book, you talk a little bit about things, your ebb and flow of your life. And for those that are watching and listening to our show, what advice would you give to someone that is trying to dig themselves out of dark times?
You know, I went to a lot of therapists and psychiatrists and stuff like that. I think it's important to, the secret to it is community, you know, it's who you surround yourself with. So like, if you feel like you're going through a hard time, you have to take a step back and see who's around you and who you're able to talk to and who has your best interest and et cetera, et cetera. So I would say that, sorry. I'm on a Zoom call. Aussie, sorry. Hang on, 1 second. Yeah, sorry. Hopefully they calm down a little bit. They get really excited to see my manager. So they're like, ah! They love them. But so, yeah, so getting out of dark times, I'd say you have to figure out community, the people that you surround yourself with, and know that you are loved, because that's the hardest thing about being in, like, the darkest point of your life, is that you're convinced no one loves you, no one, like, wants to be there for you, you're so by yourself, you know, and you have to, like, just, you have to try and think and snap out of it and know that you are so loved, and all you have to do is reach out and talk to someone. It's the most healthiest thing that you can do is talk, and again, surround yourself with really amazing, positive people. That's how I did it. And therapy is a great thing, dude. Just, even if you don't want to talk to one of your best friends about it, like, just getting these feelings off of your chest is the most, like, amazing, like, freeing feeling that you can do. You'll walk out of there feeling like a weight has been lifted off your shoulders. But find the perfect therapist, though, is another thing, because there's therapists that you will talk to and you feel like you don't have like that connection with. You have to find the perfect person that you feel like you are, is really listening to you, you know. But yeah, so there's a bunch of different things, but yeah, mostly community and yeah, just talking and know that you are loved.
How much do you, or how much are you able to step back and realize what an influence you are, not just out of the ring, but even inside the ring, where we saw Billy Starks last week in a big match, her 500th match. She's not even 20 yet. Like, to have that influence, how much are you able to step back and realize that?
Well, I don't even realize how much influence I have. I'm telling you, I second guess myself a lot. I really do. Like, I'm like, is people going to turn up to the signing? Is, like, you know, people going to buy the book? Are people going to go watch this movie that's made about me? Like, I second guess everything. So whenever someone tells me that they're inspired by me, I'm always just like blown away every time. I'm like, me? Right? That's pretty cool. Yeah. So Yeah, it feels amazing to have an impact on people and, you know, women in wrestling. It feels really great. Again, like, I don't believe it sometimes myself. So, like, getting told that is really nice.
Why was it important for you in the book to kind of chronicle everything? Because, I mean, you were incredibly honest in writing this book. You start the book right away with a very downtime in your life. Why was it important for you to share everything in your book?
Yeah, so it's important because, again, I'm not someone that is very open at all with people. Like, I don't like to share my feelings very often, and it's hard for me to do that. But I was like, if I'm going to write a book, I need to tell you everything. I need to be as real and raw and as authentic as possible, so you fully understand where my head is at and who I am as a person and what has shaped me, you know? So I'm only going to let people down if I'm not completely open about things. I'm going to write a book and be half-assed about it? Like, no. I'm going to tell you everything, the nitty gritty, the sad stuff. I'm going to make you feel something when you're reading this book. And that's the most important thing to me, like whatever. And I hope by the end of the book that you're inspired by it, you know, but, and again, I don't want to be known as like a victim in any way, shape or form in this book. I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I'm a very happy person now. I've gone through a lot and I wouldn't change a thing. Not even a tiny detail, even like the childhood stuff. I'm not changing a thing because that shaped me, and I'm thankful that it happened to someone like me that was able to be strong enough to get through it. And then so when people are reading this and they are in a dark time and they can read part of this book, and again, given the full details of everything, I'm not shying away from anything, you know, that they can look at that and be like, holy crap, she got through that, I can get through that too, you know. That's my main goal of the book. So I was like, okay, like I have to start from the very beginning of what's happened in my life. And like, I've had interviews before where a couple of, you know, the men mostly, they'll read the book and they're like, I have to close it and put it down for a second because it can get very intense. You know, it can get very intense. And that's what I want. I want people to get a little bit uncomfortable too, because it's like a wake up call for a lot of people, you know, like, and it will help a lot of people. And it just, so yeah, I'm so thankful for it. I'm really thankful for it, but I needed to just tell the whole truth here, you know, even if some people aren't going to like it.
So Ray, we've seen you quoted in other interviews talking about, like, you kind of know the date when you're done wrestling. That makes us sad. I mean, you did say that, right? That you kind of have an idea of like, yeah, I know when my final match is, when I'm going to be wrapping it up.
Yeah, so, okay, so I don't know when my final match would be, but, and I'm not saying it's forever, but I'm saying I'm coming to the end of it right now. There's no room for me. There isn't. Right now, like, I don't need to be squeezed in anywhere, and I don't want to be forced down people's throats, you know. Like, I did my, you know, time where I went to AEW, I was putting all the girls over. That was my main thing, is I just wanted to, like, elevate everybody in the best way that I can, as much as I'm able to, like, you know. And now I'm just like, okay, well, there's really not much left for me to do, but, you know, never say never. Like, if there's an opportunity that comes that obviously I can't refuse, you know, I would absolutely do it. But I think in 2025, it's really important for me to concentrate on stuff outside of wrestling. Again, love wrestling, but I have a lot going on, which I'm really excited to talk about. So, you know, like right now, like I'm getting into acting and it's really great. I have a role coming up, which, you know, I can't talk about, but I'm really excited to share when I can. And it's a really wonderful, big opportunity. And I have a great team around me that's like freaking, you know, I mean, I'm not sleeping, but I just like, we're trying to get like wonderful things to happen and I love it. And so, yeah, I have like this amazing role coming up. And then I have my own podcast about to drop 2 days after my book called Rule Breakers. And it's like, yes, we do. We sit down and we talk, sure. But we actually kind of like, it's very physical. We get very physical. We might assault our guests a little bit. Just think,
oh, it's just a warning for anybody who's signing up for the podcast in the future. That may happen when you're on with Soraya.
Yeah, I mean, we make them sign a waiver. It's fine, but they know what we're going to insult them to. So basically, it's just like a podcast meets Jackass. Right. Okay. So we just wanted to, because it's very hard space. You guys know, like, these kind of spaces are very hard to navigate and insert yourself in. So we were like, what's going to make us stand out? And I was like, okay, well, people have known me in the wrestling world for being like a little bit of a prankster. You know, if you watch Total Divas and like WWE even uploaded a couple of videos of me pranking people and like, you know, and I just love that side. I love Jackass. I love that side. I've worked with Jeff Tremaine before, the creator of Jackass, and I was electrocuting everybody. You know, it was just, it's fun. And I was like, I want to incorporate that side into a podcast. So the other day, you know, we kept it simple. This is a simpler one, and it's the dog shot collar trivia. And we get like 10 questions. And if whoever gets it wrong gets shocked, whoever gets it right, don't get shocked, right? So I did back-to-back interviews, and I got shocked so much that I was drooling by the end of it. It was the most exhausting thing ever. We have stuff like blindfold tattoo, like there's a lot of like bug eating. It's just, it gets crazier. And we're also going to ask people who's watching the video to leave a comment underneath to you know, suggest what we do next. But yeah, there is a lot of different segments, and it gets wild. And I'm excited for people to see it. So yeah, I have the book. I have Rule Breakers coming out. I have, you know, a role in the acting world that will be announced. So, oh, and then also my first ever episode, I do have a massive announcement. So I'm very excited for that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a big one. I think it's going to, it's a viral moment for sure.
We'll keep an eye out for that one. You compared your guys. You compared your physique earlier, you and John Cena. I know people get you guys mixed up. As a wrestling fan, what was it like seeing that big John Cena heel turn a few weeks ago?
You know what? I've been asked this question so much, and I love it, because I'm all for heel Cena. I think he's like, he spent his whole career being that babyface that everyone knows and loves. You know, he had to. He sold the most merch. He was doing Make-A-Wishes. Like, he had to be a good guy. He did. Like, you know, you couldn't mess up a good thing like that. And, you know, he enjoyed it too. So the fact that he's in, like, his last hurrah, you know, and he gets to step outside his comfort zone a little bit and have a little fun, like, why not? I, like, loved it. I thought it was amazing. The heel turn was perfect. They really nailed it. Like, and I know Cena's probably, like, enjoying this so much. Just to be a bad guy for once in his wrestling career, like, hell yeah. And he's good at it too, you know, like the promo that he was doing where people think like maybe you'll get new music and new merch and all that kind of stuff, and he's like, you don't get shit from me, you're gonna get the same old shit, you know. And I love it. He's like taking stuff away, and it's just, I love it. And I wish he would do heel Cena shirts, because I would be the first one to buy it. Absolutely. Did you guys like it?
I thought the promo was, like you said, the promo was perfect, especially him going after a kid. Like, he's known for like doing all the different things, and then he goes after some kid wearing his t-shirt in the stands. Yeah. Like,
anytime that you're going against your haters and your supporters both in the same promo, that's something different. I know the baseline for you guys, because Saraya, you've been there as a heel. I turned because of the fans, because of you. But he took it to another level by saying, even my supporters, you with the t-shirt, you with the hat, you're also the problem, which is amazing to me. That's great work.
It's different, you know, and he's like, I always say that Cena is one of the best, like, wrestlers when it comes to psychology. He's amazing. And like, you know, if you don't think he's the best wrestler or whatever, you, whenever you're watching him, you're glued to the TV. You are. And he can turn the fans like that. He's like, he can, like, you know, he has them in the palm of his hand. So he can go from like, maybe they're going like, let's go Cena sucks right at the beginning of the promo, to the end, he's making them all cheer for him, you know? And then this heel thing, like, you know, he's just making them boo him. And that's like, that's such a weird thing to see Cena get booed. But he's just like a magician, dude. He's amazing. And I tell every wrestler to like watch Cena and Randy. I'm a big fan of Randy too, when it comes to like camera angles and taking his time and all that kind of stuff. But promos and stuff, like, I always encourage people to watch John 100%. He's like one of the best.
Who's your biggest rival in the ring?
Biggest rival?
Yep.
Ooh, okay. So, I mean, if I had to do one more thing, it would be Mercedes. I feel like that would be a big rivalry, right? And it's an obvious rivalry. But I think my biggest was either Nikki Bella or AJ. Because AJ kind of, like, lit the match for me, you know? Like, with the frenemies, and people still talk about it to this day, you know? I would say AJ. I feel like AJ is my biggest rivalry, yeah.
All right, Soraya, we certainly appreciate the time. I can't wait for everybody else to read this book. I can't wait to see all the different things. Viral moment coming up. Yeah. Podcast where you're assaulting guests. Yeah. Acting roles. I mean, it sounds like you're incredibly busy. So we certainly take it.
Yeah.
So we certainly appreciate the time of you jumping on with us and sharing a little bit of your experiences here on GKW.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So that was Soraya. A lot of things, obviously, since then, the podcast that she kind of teased, it's come out. She has left AEW, had time left on her contract, but wasn't going to re-sign, didn't really feel like she had a place there. Said she's leaving on good terms with AEW, loves Tony, loves everybody, but has a lot of other plans. As she mentioned to us, she's got an acting role that she's deep in. She has this new podcast. So I don't know if we see her pop up in WWE anytime soon, but I wouldn't be shocked if we see her at some point return for a retirement match or something like that with the place where she came up.
AEW, the place where you could pick up your broken dreams. Because Bryan Danielson was able to wrestle after his injury. Edge able to wrestle after his injury as Cope. Soraya, the same thing. I didn't think we'd ever see Soraya in the ring again. And by the way, when she was in WWE, again, she was fine. It wasn't just great. It was just good to see her on television. But now to see her in AEW, to be able to realize her dream to be champion was kind of cool. So, you know, if you've had a long-term injury and the doctors at WWE say no, AEW will say yes, because it happened for Soraya.
Yeah, it did. And when she mentioned, like, when she first showed up, she hadn't been cleared yet. She wasn't sure what was going to happen, eventually gets cleared, and then has that moment in Wembley. So great. Great on her. Very excited for her. But we move on to number two in our three count this week. So we're on the anniversary. WWE buying WCW. As that all came together, and then the invasion storyline, all those sorts of things. But when you look back in history, Jay Hood, is WWE buying WCW a bright spot, or is it a dark spot in wrestling history?
It is a dark spot, but not because of WWE. It's a dark spot because WCW / NWA just mishandled and dropped the ball. I just think about the momentum that WCW had where they were beating WWE in the ratings every Monday night. And Eric Bischoff, he just rested on his laurels. He became part of the show as part of the NWO. And on top of that, there was no second act. I understand that everyone loved Goldberg and everyone loved, you know, the NWO and Sting and the Horsemen, all that. But other than that, there was no second act. And I know that Bischoff today will blame Time Warner for the reason why WCW sunset its company and sold it to WWE. The point is, though, Gabe, is that WCW could have been able to make a profit if you just would have been able to, you know, stay the course and understand, like, it's got to be more than NWO. It's got to be more than Diamond Dallas Page. It's got to be more than Sting. They didn't grow the company. They just rested on exactly what they were doing and didn't grow. While WWE said, here's Mike Tyson. Here's Stone Cold Steve Austin. Here's DX. So to me, I'm mad at WCW for not doing more to stay viable. They could be a company today if they would have cared about the product.
You know what's crazy? There were 288 episodes of WCW Monday Nitro. Mm-hmm. AEW, I believe, is now at 286 for Dynamite. Like that, it still seems so crazy to me that, and WCW obviously did stuff before, right? Like they existed before, like, you know, Nitro, and then they launched into the Monday Night Wars and things like that. But it's just crazy to me to think about that the AEW is about to have more television episodes of Dynamite than exist of WCW Nitro. Like, that just shows how quickly and how brightly that company burned before it completely fell apart. I guess I'd say WWE buying WCW is a bright spot because it got us Ric Flair in the WWE, you know, more. Like, Evolution was fun.
It was.
You know, his first, you know, his first retirement match. I don't know officially how many of he's had, but that retirement match against Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania was a lot of fun. I think about that. I think about, you know, DDP and Booker T and their runs that they've had within, again, putting the invasion storyline aside because that wasn't great, like, WWE kind of continuing some of those careers of those WCW wrestlers who eventually became even more legendary, you know, starting from where they were in WCW, transitioning in WWE, I think was a bright spot. Now, what you're saying makes complete sense, is everything was just so bungled and mismanaged, and I don't know how they managed to do that. But yeah, the WCW falling apart, a dark spot. And I know that Vince buying his competition led to some not great creative times in WWE, and some of the creative picked up once AEW came into the picture a handful of years ago, because you actually had competition. You've got to pay it, you know, you've got to be sharper. That's, I think that in the 17, you know, Who Killed WCW, you know, documentaries that exist on, you know, Vice and WWE Network and all that sort of thing. Like, the one thing I think everybody agrees on is WCW doing what they did brought the best out of WWE in terms of creative, in terms of doing those sorts of things. So it was certainly a negative from that point, but I just think of all the things that happened from those wrestlers who came over from WCW to WWE, Eddie Guerrero, obviously, that was a bright spot, because there were some wrestlers who certainly were able to be elevated by WWE after they bought WCW.
Yeah, all those guys. You saw Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit. Oops. Also,
no, we're not owned by WWE. We can say that name.
It's just funny how the wrestling community feels about that name, whether you should say it or not. It's weird. It's a weird thing. Like, we know Chris was a great wrestler, but then people say you can't mention his name because of what happened to him and his family. So I think that's always a weird name. It's always fun to bring it up, because people always have a really strange reaction to it. But I guess from my standpoint, Gabe, it's like, you know, what makes wrestling go around is competition. And it's what you just laid out. You know, once WCW was closed, WCW, the main talent, they didn't come over to WWE because they just wanted to stay home and get paid. Nash, Hall, Hogan, like all those guys, those main characters, they stayed at the crib. There's only a few that came over. And so what kept WWE sharp is competition. And keep in mind, when WWE, when they bought WCW, it was just WWE. After that, TNA was not a thing until, I think, 04, 05. So that's a couple of years later. So I always shake my head at it about how disappointing it was that WCW just couldn't hang in there and just be able to give us an alternative. That's the other thing. WWE was the only thing to watch. And even if you're a WWE guy, you still looked over and said, okay, what are the other guys doing? Because you're a wrestling fan. And we didn't get that for a couple of years. So that still pisses me off today, that Eric Bischoff gets on 83 weeks and blames everybody under the sun except himself for WCW not being around anymore.
Well, and again, the crazy part is you talked about an alternative. I mean, TNA has been around forever. And I mean, how many times did it look like that company was going to go away and disappear, only to keep things going? And now they obviously have the partnership with WWE, and things seem to be going pretty well for them. But again, AEW is going to be around for as long as Tony Khan wants them
to be around. I'm glad you brought that up, by the way, because a lot of people forget that. I'm glad you said that. So Dynamite and Collision are going to be just fine. AEW is viable. You think about WCW, especially during the dark days, and then look at AEW. They're going to smaller arenas, and they're selling them out. Their pay-per-views are bangers. They're better than WCW's pay-per-views. They are. So, and they're still going strong. So we'll see how long that lasts. But they're a viable number two based on their TV deal and having TV every Wednesday and Saturday.
Yeah, and they did really well with their, you know, they've done really well, I think, with their Max deal, and I mean, apparently their numbers were pretty good for the shows they did on Saturday and Sunday after the NCAA tournament. Always nice to have a hell of a lead-in, like the most exciting weekend going into your wrestling products. Number three this week on the three count, the WWE has posted a spot for a new writer as they're looking for more creative and within WWE. Let's say you applied for this job, Mr. Hood, because you don't have enough, right? You're not doing enough stuff already. So you apply for this job, you get this job. What is the first thing you would pitch WWE on if you were hired as this writer they're looking for?
Don't you have some time, Mr. Buck? Don't you have some time? Don't you have some time to do this? Little Packers, a little ESPN Milwaukee. God, I can't even imagine me doing that with all the stuff we are doing for the company. I can't imagine. You and I? Now, this is more for Brian, because he's got nothing. I mean, he's in West
Palm. That's why I'm bummed he's not here this week. That's why I'm bummed he couldn't make it.
This is for him.
He's got like five. I guarantee he's got like five ready to go, ready to pitch stories that he wants to throw Hunter's.
He runs West Palm. It runs itself. So he can actually do this. Okay, so it's fine. You and I wouldn't have no time for this at all.
No. So, no.
Okay. This is a hard question because I would say that the only thing I could think of is just have something World Cup soccer-ish or tournament-ish to be able to establish the next star. Something that's not the Royal Rumble. I'm talking about like bragging rights, but singles competition that in rare matches that you think you'd never see, NXT crossover with SmackDown to SmackDown to Raw, that kind of thing where it's like a tournament to determine who the next star is, like bragging rights, but better. That's the only thing I can think of. Something along those lines.
I threw this in the GKW group chat, so this is the one I'm going to roll with because I didn't know we were going to be doing this. So now that we know that Saray is a free agent, yes. Now that we know Saray is going to eventually end up in WWE, I think her – because everybody wants AJ Lee to return as well, yes. Right? So I say her and AJ Lee return as a tag team to challenge – you know, maybe it's after whatever match they have for the current tag team champions of Raquel Rodriguez and Liv Morgan. You have these two return at WrestleMania to clearly be the next challengers for the women's tag team. You know, then you have, you know, your match eventually, they win, things are going okay. And then eventually Saraya / Paige turns on AJ Lee and you get to have this big match between the two of them at SummerSlam. Whether it ends up being a retirement match for either one of them, that's clearly up to them. But I think having those two come back as a tag team because of all the history. We heard Saraya talk about how AJ Lee's rival that she always looks at is the biggest rival of her career. Mm-hmm. Have them together, split them up, and have the blow-off at SummerSlam in some big, big sort of match. Because I think everybody would be into AJ Lee versus Paige at SummerSlam.
What does Chick Magnet Punk think of that? CM Punk. what does he think of that? Is he okay? I mean, and that's the thing. Other thing is, like, is she interested? I'd love to see AJ Lee back.
That would be the thing. I think Saraya would be the easy pitch of that. The AJ Lee part.
That's the thing I don't know. And I know that people have wondered every time they see Punk, how's AJ? How's AJ? And he's always saying, you know, she's fine. She's great. I wonder what AJ thought about the company when Vince was running it for her to just step away. We know that she was running WoW for mm-hmm. a while. I think is that still on your cable? Does WoW still come on?
Yeah, it still pops up on like channel 18 up here in Milwaukee, I think it is. It's like Saturday afternoons at 3 or 4 o'clock.
I think it comes on late night here, 9 or 10 o'clock, my network, maybe something like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
But nonetheless, I say that I think a lot of people have been waiting to see AJ Lee come back because when she left, it was like it was a void because she could play babyface or heel. She was small, but yet she had that shining wizard. She, you know, she was dynamic. Well,
she was an authority figure. Like she did, yeah. She was everything, man. Like she did absolutely everything. Fantastic on the microphone. Tell stories in the ring. Like she's the complete package. And I like to me, this is obviously a her sure. decision. Because if she called up Hunter and went, hey, I think I want to do something. Like they would yes. come up with something for her. Yes. I think they would welcome her back very quickly with open arms. It's just, it's all up to her. And if she doesn't want that, then she doesn't want that. That's fine. That's, you know, she's got a million other things that she can do. I just, as a fan, that's something that popped in my mind, a fantasy book of, especially since we just talked to Saraya earlier.
Maybe that bragging rights thing would be something they would do in Rehad.
Oh like yeah. You know that the final, yes, the final of that, would be happening in
some
Rio,
kind of crown jewel or some kind of international. That sounds yeah. like something like that. That you mm-hmm. you hold up the championship. I guess that might be but it's not the crown jewel championship because they have it, but you don't do anything with it though. It's not does when someone wins a crown jewel championship, men or women, it doesn't move the meter at all, does it? Or
yeah,
no. No.
Okay.
No, it does not.
So, I mean, that's I you know what? I say I'm putting the stamp of approval. I'm stamping it right now, Gabe. Book it. AJ, stop.
All right.
AJ Lee.
Saraya. AJ Lee.
Book it.
Saraya. Or Paige. I guess she would be yes. Paige in WWE.
I say book it.
Whatever.
Let's go.
All right, this week in news and notes, starting with a surprise release out of Impact, Gail Kim being released and apparently does not have a non-compete, so she can go work for whomever she would like. I know Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful doing a lot of reporting around this, that this caught a lot of people by surprise, a lot of people not happy with this within that company, but Gail Kim has been relieved of her duties.
So she was working behind the scenes at Impact, and she can come back to WWE and do whatever. I think she's one of the most fabulous women's wrestlers that I've seen. She could do it all, and she could help young wrestlers in the back in WWE or wherever she'd like to go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she'd probably have more of an impact in WWE because for whatever reason, those veterans just aren't used in AEW for whatever reason, because we've seen some of those people come and go and be in and out. But wherever she goes, she's going to be a huge asset for wherever she ends up. Meanwhile, a bipartisan bill titled the Ric Flair Act passed in the North Carolina Senate this week, putting forward $500,000 to study whether a professional opened within the state. So this would more professional wrestling Hall of Fame versus the WWE, which is you get a ring and get to give a speech the year you go into the Hall of Fame and get to call yourself a Hall of Famer. But this would be a physical Hall of Fame in the state of North Carolina.
Okay. You know what's the key word in that, what you just read? Study. Mm-hmm. 500 grand for a study for it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily just saying we're going to do this, but that kind of money to study an opportunity to have a brick and mortar thing. I'm all for that because in the Carolinas, Ric Flair means a lot. Mid-Atlantic and the NWA means a lot there. I saw the newsreel on that, by the way, the news report from the same channel that used to have wrestling in that studio. Can you imagine that? Studio wrestling? Think about WTMJ, all right? And then just saying, okay, we got the news, but next to the desk is a whole ring and fans.
Just a big old ring.
How's that? I mean, how was that a thing back then? I know that was commonplace that everything was about like arena, you know, that wrestling, you know, like 30, 40 people, but just like in a TV studio. I can't believe like ABC7 in Chicago just be like, oh, that's the news. Wrestling's coming up next, right next to us. Ding, ding, ding. Here we go. Like, that's crazy. But yeah, the that for a study, I thought was fascinating.
And then finally, in news and notes, Swerve Strickland tweeting out that basically saying you have the next 5 years to enjoy him, so enjoy the ride. So it's a 5-year heads up for Swerve Strickland that he thinks he is going to be done with pro wrestling in 5 years.
Okay, I'm glad he's calling his own shot. I hope that he gets everything he's looking for. He's been out there a lot lately, by the way. Going after Booker T. I read that online. And so, but he's good, though. But he's a good face for the company. And, like, I don't know, Gabe, if he wins at Dynasty, wins back this championship. Probably not. But I think that that guy, he just comes across so well, not just in media interviews, but just to the audience, to the fans, that he should be the face of that company again at some point.
Yeah, and hopefully he does get that opportunity. Again, whether it's this week, whether it's this pay-per-view or, you know, within a year, I think he's going to have that opportunity. All right, let's wrap this up. What were your matches of the week?
Kyle Fletcher against Brody King on Dynamite was good in front of a hot crowd in St. Paul, Minnesota. Yeah. I don't know where AEW's finding these buildings. I'm like, I've never seen these places before. But good, though. Good and loud, you know?
Yeah.
Turner Hall's got a chance in Milwaukee at some point. Turner Hall.
I mean, they seem to love the UWM Panther Arena, which is where they're going to be right here in Milwaukee on Saturday. Again, we tried to get a guest, and apparently we were told no. So what are you going to do?
That's weird. I don't understand that. Adam Cole against Daniel Garcia on Collision.
Okay.
That was after Saturday's NCAA action.
Yeah. Because they had the Saturday and Sunday show.
Yes. Anything on your list?
I enjoyed El Grande Americano versus Dragon Lee on Monday Night Raw, which apparently I've gotten a lot of positive reviews.
positive reviews, you say?
I initially saw the report that like it had, you know, like it was being received good by people backstage on Twitter, but it had listed Chad Gable versus Dragon Lee. And like the community notes on the tweet said, Chad Gable did not participate in this match. He was out sick. It was Grande Americano. So like wrestling fans, saw this tweet, went, oh, we got a community note this thing, and said, no, that is not Chad Gable. That is Grande, El Grande Americano, who was wrestling in that match.
I love the community note. Don't you? Don't you love that? A little controversy. And by the way, where is Grande Americano from? Where is he from? Gulf of what? You saw that, right?
I did.
You saw that in the vignette, right? I'm like, did you have to do that? Gulf of America?
Yeah.
Okay. Just so you know, Democrats also buy shoes too.
Yeah. Thank you, MJ.
I'm just saying, if in doubt, as we know in our business, if in doubt, leave it out. But I enjoyed the match as well.
And then I also enjoyed from Friday Night SmackDown, Braun Strowman. The finish was schmozzy, but I also kind of enjoyed it because it furthered the beef between Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu. But I thought Strowman Fatu was really good, and the crowd was super into it.
I would agree with that. I would say Street Profits against Los Garza. As a tag team matchup, I thought it was very good. I saw a move I've never seen before in that matchup. Los Garza actually looked pretty good. And we don't count Mercedes Starks, right? Because that was last Wednesday. So we keep that
correct.
Out.
Correct. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So there you have it.
If you happen to miss any of the show, like that Saraya interview, make sure you check out the YouTube page, youtube.com/@goodkarmabrands. Comment, subscribe as we get closer to Dynasty. We get closer to WrestleMania. We're going to discuss it all right here next week on GKW.